like to call to order, as soon as I find out if the tape is running, yes. Call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes for Thursday, January 31st, 2013. Our first order of business is reviewing the minutes from January 30th. Are there any corrections to be made? Seeing none, Senator Coonan moves that the minutes be accepted as presented. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. today we're going to take up two subjects, both of which are members' bills, but also which are issues that are addressed in the governor's proposed budget with regard to tax policy. We're going to begin with Senate File 10, which deals with foreign source royalties and an increase in the research and development tax credit. It does not speak to the foreign operating corporations, which the governor's proposal does, just with the royalties. So,
you told Weager you were going to start with him. Are you starting with Weager?
Oh. I'm sorry. I thought, Senator Weager, that you were going to come back, but if no one minds, we'll start with the capital equipment one. And you have testifiers as well, correct? Mr. Chairman, Senator Weager and I bring you two separate bills with separate approaches to the issues surrounding capital equipment and the imposition of the sales tax on that. And first of all, just a little bit of history. The in the 90s, I believe it was, there was an effort to, particularly in the Minnesota House, to reform the sales tax system with regard to its impact on Minnesota businesses. And we had a an interim task force that one of its major recommendations was to move to get rid of the sales tax on capital equipment. And so we started that, and I think it's actually one of the success stories of a phase-in. That is, we, for a number of years, when Governor Carlson was the governor, we moved along in reducing the percentage of the sales tax on capital equipment until it got to zero. At a time when a lot of people wanted to use that money for other things, and the legislature and Governor Carlson really insisted on, no matter what other needs and vulnerabilities there were in our tax system, that we were going to keep that schedule of a phase out, and we actually did do that. What we were not able to do, however, was to change the to an upfront exemption so that you could go to a company where you were purchasing capital equipment and perhaps just show them an exemption document, and you wouldn't have to pay and then apply for a refund. You might think, because of how we file our personal income taxes, that, you know, you just file it, and then if you do a refund, you get a check from the state or from the federal government, and it might not be exactly easy, but it's not overwhelming. For Minnesota businesses and others, it's not just businesses that purchase capital equipment. You might be surprised to learn that cities purchase capital equipment, that the process of applying for that refund is horrendous, and I don't think there's anyone that would dispute that. First of all, you're only allowed to apply twice a year, and you can have multiple transactions on a single return. But this is what you need to tell the Department of Revenue. You need on the form, which is the ST-11, you have to include a description of your business activity, a listing of additions to capital assets and leased equipment, copies of the entire lease or leases involved, including all schedules. And you have to include one invoice from the claim period showing the tax that was paid. You have to provide copies of the use tax accrual sheets showing that the use tax, in case it wasn't the sales tax that was collected, was paid on the capital equipment that was purchased. You have to provide something that's called an ST-11-REF or a similar spreadsheet with the following information: the project number, the invoice date, the invoice number, the vendor name, the equipment purchased, whether sales or use tax was paid, the month and year the tax was paid, the purchase price, the total tax paid, the amount of state tax refund claimed, the amount of the local tax refund claimed, and, if that wasn't enough, a detailed description of how the equipment is used. That's what we're talking about, giving businesses mostly some relief. We think of just a purchase of capital equipment, which also is a term of art in the tax code, because on your financial statements, you can have a capital asset that you depreciate, but it's not capital equipment. On the other hand, you can have a piece of leased equipment that you expense, just take the whole deduction on your tax return, and it is a piece of capital equipment. So you have to pay real close attention to how you're characterizing what action it is you want to take. There is not only just straightforward purchase of capital equipment, but there are altogether 12 types of refund applications that can be made with regard to the sales tax, including things like sales tax that was incorrectly paid by the purchaser, tax paid on a park trailer. Probably didn't know that sales tax that's imposed on a park trailer is not exempt up front, but it is subject to a refund. So there are 12 different types of refund claims. What we're talking about here is giving relief on the purchase of capital equipment. But as you know, we don't just have a state sales tax. So when you fill out the form, it looks pretty simple when you look at it here, but when you fill out the form, you have to enter the refund amount you're claiming, both from the state of Minnesota and any local taxes. So you have to calculate a tax that might be have been paid to the city of Minneapolis, the city of St. Paul, the city of Rochester, the city of Mankato, the county of Hennepin, the transit improvement sales tax, and then they have three categories of other. So this process is not a simple one. And one of the effects of that is, even though we usually don't predict in, or the department doesn't predict the impact of a provision in the tax statutes, when they do the when they do a revenue estimate on capital equipment, by the way, you have 3.5 years after the sales tax transaction to make a claim for the refund. The estimate on mine, my bill, which is Senate File 78, and I'm assuming is the same on Senator Wieger's bill, is that currently 5% of 5% of the current eligible refunds are not claimed. They're just not claimed. Now, you can ask yourself, well, why not? Well, think about everything that you would have to go through to apply for that refund. And we have had in the past, in terms of people coming and testifying about the nightmare of going through the application for the refund. They've come in with, you know, stacks of paper this high. You can, I found out you can send all the information in on a CD now, but with stacks of paper this high for a single application for numerous transactions on to get the refund. So last year we had a proposal that started the ball rolling again, because we've always been told that giving the upfront exemption, we never could afford to do 100% of it. So how the questions arose, well, if we wanted to start working on that, moving toward an upfront exemption, what was the best way of doing it? Now, it's a you know, it is a scalable proposition, but it didn't get rid of the that particular approach did not get rid of the horrendous paperwork. We still don't know, even in giving an exemption, what kind of hoops people are going to have to go through to indicate that the capital equipment they're purchasing is for an allowed purpose and an allowed an allowed business. But another approach that was tried, which is reflected somewhat in my bill, was to start out first with small businesses, with companies, giving them the upfront exemption for a company that had 80 or fewer employees. And if together, if maybe another business own part of their business, that together, that combined total of employees of two kind of partnering businesses also kept the number of employees at 80 or below. So to start there. So that's why when you look at, if you would, the revenue estimate on Senate File 78, the impact on the general fund is $17.6 million, and then there's the offset from the legacy dollars for a total cost to or tax relief, however you want to characterize it, of $18.6 million. My bill then in FY 2016, which would be starting July 1st of 2015, then goes to a full exemption for all purchases of capital equipment, and so we see that total cost is is 88.7. In the instructions or the description, if you will, of four businesses, I thought it might be of interest to look at some of the examples that the department gives on their website about what's capital equipment and what's not. So a first example, and these are kind of short. A newspaper publisher buys a computer system to permanently store news stories for future reference. The publisher also adds devices for quality control. Some devices measure the quality of the ink flow and its color, while others are used for employee and job scheduling. The computer system and the devices used to store completed stories and measure the quality of the actual product, I don't think they mean the news quality of the news story, but anyway, qualify as capital equipment. The devices used for employee and job scheduling do not qualify because they do not control or regulate production equipment and do not have an effect on the product. Another example from about a bakery. A bakery installs a washing system to clean and sterilize baking pans and production equipment. They also purchase pressure washers used to clean the floors and the walls. The washing system to clean and sterilize the baking pans and the production equipment qualifies as capital equipment because it affects the quality of the baked product. The pressure washers do not, since they are used in support operations for general plant maintenance and cleaning. I think you can begin to see that a company needs to carefully consider what it is it's going to be applying for in the refund process, and then just generally about what's exempt and what's not. I mentioned that it's not just businesses, and their 12th example in all of these examples is the following. A city sells electricity at retail to its residents. The lines and poles to transport the electricity up to the last transformer outside the customer's location qualify for the capital equipment refund. The city also buys digging equipment and a hoist to install the poles. This equipment, including all materials necessary to install the poles, qualify for the refund. So there's just a wide variety of examples that the department provides in order to give some guidance, general guidance, to those that are considering applying for the refund.
Senator Scoy has a question.
Yes.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Ress, this is interesting, and I'm starting to ponder a little bit about where the decision-making is going to end. You know, we do the upfront exemption. Mm-hmm. Where is the decision-making going to fall on who decides whether to charge the sales tax initially or not? And is this going to end up being a seller's decision whether to charge the tax, so whoever is selling the pressure washer to the baker will have to contact the department and find out if it should be charged or not? Or how do we think that part of it's going to turn out?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Scoy, what I'm really trying to set the stage for here, and Senator Wieger is going to talk about the complications too, is this is a governor's proposal as well. It doesn't start until July 1st of 2015, and there's a little bit of difference in the revenue estimates, but that can come from any number of reasons, and in mine, it's like 11 months in the first year, and there may be inflation factors and so on. So I don't want to get distracted by the revenue estimate. But when we hear the governor's proposal in large, we're going to have to ask them how they're going to go about setting up a system that is understandable to sellers, understandable to the buyers, and what are they anticipating as being the cost of compliance? you can see a tremendous amount of detail for the that's required for the refund. How are they going to make sure that they're not scofflaws on either side of the transaction, and that the exemption is being properly applied? And I think that that has to be a question that the department, when we get really into the governor's budget, needs to provide for us. But it, but I'm laying, I think, the groundwork of why that's necessary. It's not just amount. It's just not. It's not just a matter of saying, well, this is capital equipment, and this is not, because part of it depends upon the use of it. And something in one instance may be capital equipment that isn't in another if it is not part of the actual production process and is used only for operations like that newspaper one. So it's a good move, I think, but we need to be very careful about it. So that's the presentation and from me. And in the governor's changes for his upfront capital equipment to begin in July 1st of 2015, the fiscal year 2016, he has an exemption of it's all at once, and he has it for listed at 85.4. And Senator Wieger has his, which begins earlier, and then he also has some folks that we'd like to, you to hear from, businesses that can tell you about the impact on their businesses.
But Senator Scoy, follow up.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Chair. And Senator Est, I appreciate what you're bringing forward, because I think there's a large, as you're mentioning, there's a large number of issues, and we just don't want to transfer this complexity up the ladder from the purchaser to the seller. And as you mentioned, there are going to be a large number of potential purchases that would be taxable for one buyer and not for another one. And there's going to be pretty needed to be pretty good guidance there, and we are going to have to, because you know every buyer, every purchaser is going to want all of their equipment exempt, and the seller is going to end up making some decisions here, and the department's going to, when they, as you mentioned, present the governor's budget, have to kind of spell out how that process is going to work.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, and I. And I am, I fully expect that this is not a new issue for the department, that because there have been proposals in the past to one sort or another to either phase in or do like the small business one or a total upfront exemption immediately, that I seriously doubt that they don't have a plan to address these issues. But I think it's important for us to understand that it's not as simple as we might otherwise consider it, as the product itself carries the exemption with it, where that's not the case. The product plus a number of other factors have to go into whether or not it is exempt because of it. It's that it's capital equipment. So,
thank you,
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senator Rest, thank you for the eloquent background on this issue.
And Senator Wieger, welcome to the committee. And Senator Wieger's bill is Senate File 95.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, Senate File 95, has been alluded to, addresses the capital equipment exemption, but it does it at the point of purchase, and it does it June 30, 2013. I recognize the need for looking at scaling, phasing in, and this has been in a number of proposals in the past. But as Senator Rest pointed out, all the paperwork that the businesses need to go through, let's get it right. Let's do it now. And I have witnesses that will testify as to why we should do it. The Financial impact fiscal year 2014 is $102 million, in 2015, $62.7 million. You'll look at the total picture, but if we're going to look at fairness, how we can improve the jobs climate and make real changes that will have an impact, this will do it. The bottom line is red tape. You want to cut red tape. You want to eliminate red tape. All these forms that they have to fill out, then you're going to implement it and get it done now. So I have two testifiers from the White Bear Area Chamber of Commerce, which represents tens of thousands of jobs in the East Metro area. And when I met with their chamber, just as you do with your local business groups and others, they said, number one priority, can we please do something on this? I have the chair of the chamber and past chair. The chair is Ryan Steen, general manager of International Paper, and also I have Mike Bromelkamp, a CPA from Olson Thielen. So if Mr. Steen could proceed.
Okay, welcome to the committee, gentlemen, and identify yourself for the record before you start. Thank you.
My name is Ryan Steen, and I work for International Paper. I live in White Bear Township. Senator Rest, Chair, and members of the Senate Committee on Taxes, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today in support of Senate File 95. My name is Ryan Steen. I manage a corrugated packaging facility in White Bear Lake. It is a facility where we make stuff, and it's a very capital-intensive business. International Paper is a global leader in the production of paper and paper packaging products. In Minnesota, the company employs more than 650 people at nine different manufacturing facilities and also distribution facility. The facility that I manage has 120 employees and an annual payroll of about $5 million. I'm actually the past chair of the chamber as of about 3 weeks ago, and we've had a good year. We've had a good year with the chamber. And that is, we are also in Senator Wieger's district. I strongly support the creation of a sales and use tax exemption for the purchase of capital equipment, and kind of the theme of my comments, and they'll be brief, is competition. Personally, this opportunity goes back to my early days as a project engineer. I was living in the Chicago area at the time, and my role was to prepare financial justifications for new capital equipment, and I covered the states of Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. And by far, the most difficult with justifying capital equipment requests was the facility here in Arden Hills, Minnesota. And the roadblock, one of the roadblocks, was the Minnesota sales and use tax. Today, 25 years later, and a few less hairs, we're at least thankful for the option of a rebate. That wasn't available before. But let me explain just some of our specific concerns with the current taxing. As we prepare and submit economic justifications to our corporate, okay, for new capital equipment, currently they require us to add that 6.5% up front. Because the rebate is not certain, we have to include it up front. What that causes is it makes it more difficult to achieve the cost of capital hurdle rate as we put together these projects. And sometimes we lose out on expansion opportunities in the Minnesota facilities. You see, International Paper operates 190 facilities similar to mine, just in the U.S. And they're located across 36 different states. And so year after year, White Bear Lake and our other Minnesota facilities compete against the other facilities for a finite amount of capital equipment that's available. For example, International Paper has been strategically updating their fleet of box-making machines. We're talking multi-million dollar pieces of equipment here. And over the last few years, Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin have all been on the list ahead of the Minnesota facilities. Thankfully, this past year, White Bear Lake was able to get one of these machines, but we were further down the list because it was harder to justify. According to our tax department, for the states in which International Paper has manufacturing operations, only six still tax capital equipment investment, and that would be Alabama, Arkansas, California, Florida, Kentucky, and Mississippi. We are also not aware of any other states that have a rebate mechanism similar to what's used in Minnesota. So Minnesota is unique. It is time-consuming for us to prepare the file, has been explained on that. And again, we're only limited to two claims per year. The system is complicated and honestly can discourage capital investment. And I'm also told by one of our chamber members at the accounting firm of Boyum & Barringer that they estimate that only 65% of the businesses actually follow up and claim that tax rebate. They just get discouraged. So please understand that a simple upfront exemption could be the deciding factor in how a multi-state manufacturer like International Paper decides to deploy capital. The upfront exemption would be simpler, less costly for the state to administer as well. We are in a tough competition for capital, and we're just asking for your support to help us to invest, our company, invest in Minnesota versus the facilities in the other states. So I strongly encourage you to support Senate File 95. Thank you for your time, and in advance for your consideration.
All right, thank you. And Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Steen, just out of curiosity, do you have an accountant on staff or somebody with financial background to do the compliance issues?
Interesting question. Over the years, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and Senator, thank you. We've reduced our staffing at the local level. And right now, for each of our local facilities, we have one accountant, and then we have a complex controller that would manage three or four facilities. So we're very short on staff as far as being able to complete that.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Steen, part of the reason I was bringing that up is because the smaller the company, the less likely it is that you have an accountant to do all the compliance. So it becomes even more of a roadblock for that business. And so I wanted to clarify that the bigger you get, at least you have an accountant. And either way, I'm very, very supportive of this direction. But the second question related to that is when you're competing for new capital with other states, how often does that correlate to the possibility of more jobs? In other words, if you have a big piece of equipment that comes in, does that correlate to there could be new jobs with that or not?
Mr. Steen.
Chair and Senator Gazelka, in a growing economy, we will be investing to grow and match a growing business. Right now, our economy and in the state of Minnesota is not growing. So honestly, the capital investment right now is around cost-saving initiatives. It would be our expectation we get our economy growing, we will then be adding additional equipment that would then drive employment. But until the economy starts growing and people buy additional packaging, it would happen at that point.
So, Mr. Chair, then Mr. Steen, then at least it's keeping jobs in Minnesota versus potentially losing them.
Undoubtedly keeping jobs, yeah. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions for Mr. Steen?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest.
I have a comment, and I thought that's perhaps where Senator Gazelka was going, with regard to who it is that does the preparation of these returns and if it will be simpler. We hope it will be simpler with the upfront exemption. But as you know, if a company and you hire somebody, an outside firm, for example, an attorney or a tax attorney or an accountant to prepare these forms, and they're not in-house, under what we're looking at, I mean, we can ask them, but the governor's proposal in terms of the sales tax on business services about whether such a service, accounting service, would be then subject to the sales tax. And I think, you know, a business would be, if both of these go through, I mean, that's one thing, but the proposal from the governor doesn't start until July 1st of 2015, but the sales tax on services starts January 1st of 2014. So a business, I think, in that situation will have to decide, particularly small businesses, whether they even then will go ahead and apply for the refund versus the cost to their company that would be subject to the sales tax in order to purchase that. So they'd have to both bring both things in as a final cost of doing business. So I think that, you know, some trade-offs in all of these things going forward, because I'm thinking there's still going to be some red tape around the exemption. So a business that is thinking about purchasing equipment to make sure that everything is all lined up, even with the exemption, will have to take into account if they hire somebody to certify that, whether that service would be subject to the sales tax. Perhaps the department will come up with a system that's fairly simple that only the most complex and big transactions really would need a keen eye, and that could be somebody in-house where that wouldn't be the case. But I think we need to keep that in mind too as we go forward with these proposals.
Okay, Mr. Brommelkamp, identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hey, my name is Mike Brommelkamp. I live in Matamidi. I want to thank Mr. Chair and members of the committee for the opportunity to appear today, and I'm appearing in support of Senate File 95. I'm a principal with the firm Olson Thielen CPAs here in the Twin Cities. We have about 100 employees. We serve thousands of clients across Minnesota in the five-state area. I'm a member of the Minnesota Chamber, White Bear Area Chamber, and Minnesota Society of Certified Public Accountants. I practice primarily in the areas of audit, tax, consulting, and business valuation. The current refund program does need to be converted to an upfront exemption, as it has been aptly described by Senator Rest, who has taken most of my testimony away from me. So I will just tell you that the word nightmare is absolutely applicable here, and if you take that with you, my work is primarily done. We also believe it's a compliance challenge to the state. I got to believe the Department of Revenue would love to find some streamlining and the ability to spend their time trying to do things that are going to be more useful. It's a significant cash flow problem for many of the Minnesota businesses, including primarily small businesses and startups that are cash poor and trying to figure out how to make these investments without the burden of the basically making an interest-free loan to the state until they can get the refund back. The businesses that I work with have a hard enough time making the decision to make a capital investment. As Mr. Steen described, there are all kinds of dynamics that go into this, and the sales tax ramifications just make this more difficult. Funding for these capital expenditures, particularly for small business and startups, the funding is almost impossible to obtain, and it's a really challenge for those businesses to commit to expenditures. All of us in Minnesota need to do what we can do to promote capital investment by our business community, because that allows us to stimulate future job creation, strengthen our regional, national, and global competitiveness, and expand our state economy, which is in all of our best interests. Converting to an upfront exemption at the point of purchase will simplify a difficult administrative process and promote transparency, simplicity, and fairness in business taxation. The bills that we're talking about today both represent good tax policy, and I would encourage you to do what you can to make them a reality for the business community. Thank you.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Brommelkamp? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
We have one more testifier on the list, Ms. Kadoon.
Gentlemen,
did you sign it?
I need to sign it.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Beth Kadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm here to speak in strong support of Senate File 78 and Senate File 95 and appreciate Senator Rest and Senator Wieger bringing these provisions forward. I won't repeat all the testimony you heard. We certainly concur with remarks the individuals and business folks from White Bear Lake talked about. The capital equipment exemption is a really good example of the strategic tax change that the state made a few decades ago to eliminate the sales and use tax on certain business inputs in order for Minnesota to be more competitive and help encourage business growth and expansion in Minnesota. The current refund, as Senator Rest talked about, really does cause great administrative burdens and costs, in addition to the cash flow issues that were mentioned earlier on these large purchases. And it's probably even more so now that credit's even harder to get if you've been reading the paper lately. These changes will eliminate those administrative and cash flow issues and is a good strategic change, we believe, to help make Minnesota's tax system more competitive, transparent, and efficient, as well as to reduce some administrative costs from the Department of Revenue, too, when they're trying to do these refunds. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Cadoon, it's good to see you this morning. I know you've been around here for a number of years, and you probably were working in the department when we were carrying some of these provisions earlier, previous years. And as Senator Rest has indicated, there's a number of interactions going on between this proposal and other proposals that are in the governor's budget, sales tax and revenue that he's raising. And you know that in previous years, we've all recognized the good tax policy of doing this, but the problem is raising the money. And I'm curious, Ms. Cadoon, if you have any recommendations on how we could raise the money to accomplish the goal that we all want to do here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have specific recommendations on how you would raise the funds to pay for this provision at this point.
Senator Mr. Chair, thank you. And do you think that there would be opportunities for you to support some of the governor's provisions to raise the revenue to pay for this?
We, at this point, have strong reservations and concerns with the governor's tax proposal. I'm certainly willing to share some of our concerns if you want to hear them at this point.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, maybe we'll get an opportunity later on to do that, but I just want to make the point that the problem, the reason that this hasn't been accomplished earlier is because of the revenue estimate that always tracks along with it, and you would be well aware of that difficulty. So as the Chamber and other organizations are supportive of these initiatives that cost money, I would ask you to find a way to pay for them, because that's always been the challenge.
Ms. Cadoon.
One follow-up on that. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's some changes that were done previously or recommendations on how you could actually phase this in so you don't incur some of those additional costs right up front. And so there's some opportunities to do it as a phased-in approach as well. And hopefully you'll have some of the economic growth that would occur from that to help pay for those provisions.
Sure.
Senators, go ahead.
Thank you. And, I think Senator Rest is actually utilizing some of that in her approach, and perhaps that'll, be an option that we can consider. You know, one of the problems with the phase-in is it pushes those costs out into the out years. And one of the positives that I've seen in the governor's proposal is that he is balancing the out years. So we want to pay particular attention to that also.
Any further questions for Ms. Cadoon? Okay, thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman, if you would over Senate File 78 and Senate File 95.
Okay. Senate File 78 is laid over, and Senate File 95 is laid over. And now on the agenda, Senate File 10, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 10 does two things. With regard to investments in Minnesota, first of all, it repeals the corporate subtraction for foreign royalties, and then it increases the R&D credit for qualifying expenses from 2.5% to 4.5% on those qualifying expenses over $2 million. And it's a bifurcated system so that there's on the first $2 million, there's one rate, and then on the second, and then every then amounts above that is a 2.5% rate. And we're not, the proposal, and I will offer the amendment in just a second, is not to touch the base amount, but only the additional amount. So, Mr. Chairman, if you will, to accomplish that, I offer the A3 amendment.
Okay. Senator Rest moves the A3 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Oh, if members are looking for the amendment, it's in the folders. I think you've all found it. Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
motion prevails.
The reason why the amendment is so long is because there are a number of different sections in the statute that make a reference to foreign royalties for corporations, and they each had to be struck. So that's why the amendment is a number of pages long, and the actual increase in the
Senator Scoia does it.
Well, Mr. Chair, she's answering my question.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And the trying to find Pollock, where is the R&D credit?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, it's on the first page, lines 1.2 to 1.4.
Yes, I'm sorry, of course. But it references then page 4. Line 18, where there was a blank, there's now inserted 4.5. So if you want to just take a look at that section very, very briefly. It's page 4 of the bill. That's true. So it's Minnesota Statutes 290.068. The credit is allowed. That's allowed is what we're doing is reinstating the current law there rather than having two blanks. I just want to make sure that's clear. So the proposal then is 10% of the first $2 million and then increasing on the amount over $2 million from 2.5% to 4.5%. So. Mr. Chairman and members, in the late 1980s, some of us were around, we, in working with Governor Perpich at the time, had a proposal that dealt with something that came to be called foreign operating corporations. To the best of my recollections, the proposal that created the tax preference was sponsored in the Senate by Senator Pogemiller and in the House by Representative Rest. So I have a long and spotted history with this provision. And there were others involved too, but that's when it came in front of us. So it has been around for a number of years, and I would suggest that it has been transformed into something that we did not anticipate at that time, and it has outlived its usefulness for a couple of reasons as a matter of tax policy. We have had changes to the statute dealing with foreign operating corporations. We've been successful in that. And I think 2010 was the last time. There have been proposals to repeal the statute dealing with foreign operating corporations as well as the royalties section. This particular bill does not deal with that. But if you would look to the governor's proposal, once again, he proposes doing both. What I find interesting about that is in a in an issue brief that was done by House Research maybe a year and a half ago, the revenue estimate on repealing both foreign operating corporations and the foreign royalties was only about now the amount that would be the revenue that would be gained just on the foreign royalties portion of this whole area of the law. And just before the hearing, I asked Ms. Von Mosch and their corporate expert if there were some explanation, if on the House research brief, if just from a year and a half ago, was that $111 million impact just a mistake? Was it, even though it was referenced as being the whole ball of wax, was that incorrect, or why so much difference? Because in the foreign operating corporations, the governor's proposal is from what they gave us in their original documents. We don't have language, but the original documents, they have the $109 million, which they have for the foreign royalty subtraction repeal, which is my bill. But then the FOC repeal is another $42.4 million, and the interaction between the two, which I'm sure is extremely complicated, gets to a total cost of or a total revenue impact of $153 million, some 40-some million dollars more. And the question arises, well, what's the reason for that? And obviously, we can talk about the economy, the impact of the economy, and improving in terms of investments, but also it looks like a very dramatic change in corporate behavior. And I think it's that can be concerning to Minnesota taxpayers, and perhaps needs some explanation from those that benefit from the preference. And I'm sure, and I know we're going to be hearing from a number of them. A foreign operating corporation, to start with, is it qualifies for the special tax treatment if it is a domestic corporation that's part of a unitary group, and that was part of the trade-off in the late 1980s when Minnesota, for its corporate reporting, adopted the combined reporting and the unitary approach to complex business organizations. And so the FOC had to be, to qualify for the special tax treatment, had to be a domestic corporation that was part of a unitary group, one member of which is taxable in Minnesota. And it had to derive, it has to derive 80% or more of its gross income from active foreign business income, or be a corporation operates in U.S. territories and possessions such as Puerto Rico. It couldn't be a foreign sales corporation or another type of organization which actually under the federal tax code no longer exists. The tax benefits for foreign operating corporations are that 80% of its income is sheltered from tax, and it's termed as a deemed dividend. And then its income is allocated to the shareholders in order to take advantage of that dividend received deduction. When it pays royalties and fees to another entity in a unitary business, the receiving corporation subtracts 80% of those amounts if that foreign operating corporation is part of its unitary business. And that is what is referred to as the foreign royalty subtraction. It does not apply to income that is derived from U.S. sources. But how did the income become foreign source income? In 2011, as I mentioned earlier, the department indicated or estimated that the repeal of the FOC and foreign royalty provisions together would increase by about $117 million for this fiscal year. They also estimated that the total corporate revenues were estimated to be about $1.1 billion for 2013 back in 2011. And as I mentioned, the FOC provisions were part of moving toward the adoption of a combined reporting apportionment in the 80s, and that we should pay attention to the fact that they were necessary under what we had as what we call the water's edge combined reporting system. The issues that have arisen have been what some consider to be a legal loophole of moving and shifting income from domestic activities into the FOCs and then claiming the deduction by transferring assets, and we'll hear about intangible or intellectual property as being what is transferred and made and taken advantage of under these provisions, and whether or not that was the intention when we were talking about having foreign royalties receive a tax preference. Commissioner France, and it is not an easy area of the law. Commissioner France, however, I think made a very good point the other day when he was presenting the overall governor's budget, is that the foreign royalties deduction that is allowed currently, and we have an impressive list in the handout from that they'll speak to, I'm sure, from Life Science Alley of the corporations, the big Minnesota corporations that take advantage of it. But it's $109 million that is subsidized by other Minnesota corporations. And so the discussion, I think, becomes because in the governor's proposal, he says, you know, if you look at just the balancing of it, he removes the FOCs and the foreign royalties and then reduces the corporate rate. And there's only a net gain in revenue from the corporate sector in the corporate franchise tax of about $4 million. So it's almost revenue neutral. You know, it's rounding errors kind of things. And I think the question for policymakers is that a good trade-off? Or is a better trade-off for taxpayers, for the business economy, to allow the foreign operating corporations to continue and the foreign royalty deductions to be allowed and to either keep the corporate rate where it is or find some other way of reducing it? And the governor has clearly made a choice in one direction. In his proposal, I don't see that there is I don't think he has an increase in the R&D credit, but in his proposal in years past, he has had a proposal to
increase the R&D credit, and I think there are a lot of economists that think that that's being able to do that, and the R&D credit is only available to Minnesota corporations or for activity in Minnesota, that there's a lot of bang for the buck there. So we look at, for these same corporations that have enjoyed the FOC statute, the benefits from that, and the foreign royalties, is it a better deal for them, even, as well as other corporations, to trade for an increase in the R&D credit? Now, in this proposal, in order to just look at what the impact would be, I just raised, you know, said, okay, let's see what raising it, almost doubling it, as a matter of fact, for investments over $2 million, how would that offset the foreign royalties? And so some dollars drop to the bottom line, $72 million. You could, you know, put all of it into the R&D credit, or you could take that $72 million and apply it toward reducing the corporate rate, although it would not have that great an impact on the statutory rate, but it would be a beginning. So in all of these proposals that we have coming forward from me, from you, from the governor, there's no such thing as a free lunch here. I mean, there are always trade-offs of creating new winners, new losers, if you will, and is it in the best interest of the whole economy to make these changes? Some would call them reform, some wouldn't. But these changes in our tax system to address the issues that Commissioner Franz found when he was going around the state and hearing over and over again that our whole tax system on this three-legged stool was out of whack, and we needed to review those policies. And then we can hear from companies. I believe that in the best of all worlds, in terms of state tax policy, that the corporate income tax is perhaps the worst system that we have. Others disagree, but I agreed with Governor Pawlenty that we should get rid of it, and it is the epitome of the imposition of double taxation. You tax corporate profits, and then you turn right around and tax the dividends that are received by shareholders. And we should find a way of getting rid of it. But in practical purposes, that's probably not going to happen. But it seems to me that we ought to be able to find better ways for Minnesota businesses to participate in paying for the benefits that they receive of an educated workforce first and most. But if that's not possible, then I think we need to be looking at other ways to achieve that. So, Mr. Chairman and members, that's this proposal. It's not complete. We usually don't like to see money standing on the bottom line, but I just offered this as an idea. It's different than the governor's because he repeals both the FOCs and the foreign royalties. But I hope you would keep in mind in listening to the arguments about why it's good for Minnesota businesses, that you keep in mind, is it good for all Minnesota businesses in terms of what businesses that do not enjoy the foreign royalties deduction or the FOC status, is it to their best interest to continue to pay for that through high corporate income tax rates? So, Mr. Chairman, members, that's my presentation.
Okay. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rest, I'd work with you to eliminate all corporate taxes, but What I've got a question on is, do we know how many companies are going to be impacted by the foreign royalty subtraction repeal? It's $109 million, but mm-hmm. roughly how many companies is that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Gazelka, if you look on the what I had underlined that with regard to if you look on the back, page 2 of the revenue estimate, they give the basis on which they derive the estimate, and they talk about the tax for approximately 600 unitary groups would be affected by the repeal of the subtraction. So, you know, it's not a small number. I mean, that the Life Science Alley, these are the big hitters here, but there are 600 unitary groups that they predict, estimate, if you will, would be affected.
And Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, have any of those given us impact to how it would impact their position in Minnesota? And
Mr. Chairman and Senator Gazelka, I think with the with looking at their the life science sheet, you're going to find that they give that kind of information about at least in a little paragraph, and then I'm sure that the testifiers will be more specific about why they think it's a good trade-off.
Senator Scoia.
Oh, thank you. And well, Senator Rest, it depends to Senator Gazelka's questions, depends somewhat on which one of these proposals we finally adopt as to how it impacts business, because they're going to then look at if their foreign royalty subtraction is less than the amount that they would pay in corporate taxes under Governor Dayton's proposal. They can balance that out under yours. It depends on how much participation they have in the research and development credit as to. So it's going to impact all of them differently depending on what their balance is, I would assume.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scoia, right. I mean, the governor's proposal wipes out both, lowers the rate. Mine looks to if the big issue in terms of the investment in the intellectual property is just this deduction, is it better to do it in for Minnesota companies to do it in the rather than having them, you know, spread out their this income that may or may not be from foreign business activity? Would it be better to increase even maybe more than what I'm doing here the R&D credit?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's a policy question. It's that as one tax person in a big corporation said, we need to have an adult conversation about in this state about where what's the best way to incent those activities. And, you know, this is a proposal. I'm certainly willing to listen to better ideas.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator S., maybe when the testifiers come forward, if it's okay with you and they're prepared, maybe they could kind of talk to us about some of these different proposals that aren't necessarily in front of us today.
I hope so. And, Mr. Chairman, since following that discussion, we'll lay the bill back over. I think I'm just going to come back to the table so they can come up here all together.
Okay. Thank you.
But I would prefer if you kept the gavel.
Okay. If the testifiers would like to come forward, please. Okay. Margaret Anderson Kelleher, former speaker, it's good to see you. Welcome
you.
To the
thank
committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for entertaining testimony on this proposal today. First, I want to start by thanking Commissioner Franz and Senator Rest and all of you for all the hard work you are going to do on tax reform this year. It's very clear this is going to be a hot topic. And I know you want to ask very specific questions about companies today, but I assure you there are very busy tax departments probably firing up right now after that amendment, Senator Arrest, who are going to be looking at calculating the impact of all these things. Today I come before you as President and CEO of the Minnesota High Tech Association. The fact sheet before you was created by the Minnesota High Tech Association and Life Science Alley. You'll hear from Life Science Alley in a few moments, and you'll also be hearing from the Minnesota Chamber on the proposal as well. Now, first, I think it's important, Mr. Chair and members, to take a step back and think about what kind of economy we want to have in the state of Minnesota. And when we think about this from the High Tech Association's perspective, which there is member overlap between our three organizations, we think about the number of high-skill science, technology, and innovation-based jobs in the state. And it's important that we think about those jobs because they make a substantial difference in the lives of individuals, families, and communities. Just how much, you might wonder, do they make a difference in the lives of our state? They make a difference to the tune of the average Minnesotan earns around $45,000 a year working in their job. In the jobs that we're talking about that are affected by things like the research and development tax credit as well as the foreign royalty deduction, that is significantly higher, almost $80,000. That's a 74% increase in terms of the wages of the individual, and that definitely has an impact on the community in the state, on the prosperity of our state. Thinking about what kinds of jobs we want to incent and what kinds of businesses we want to have in Minnesota does always put us in conflict with not necessarily thinking that every single thing is equal here. And I'm going to tell you today that the elimination in this proposal of the foreign royalty deduction is particularly detrimental on those types of jobs, the jobs that earn the 74% higher than the average Minnesota wage. Now, it's not to say that other parts of the governor's proposal, our organization will not say that you should not consider the FOC changes, some of the internet sales tax changes, things like that. Very interested in working with you on those proposals. But on the foreign royalty deduction issue, you do not have to be a foreign operating corporation to take advantage of the foreign royalty deduction. And that is an important part of the discussion today. In fact, I would contend to you, when Senator Klobuchar took the Boring Patent Act and renamed it in Congress the America Invents Act, if the foreign royalty deduction was actually called the Minnesota Intellectual Property Act, we would not maybe be having this very same discussion because we would be talking about what we actually make and invent here. And so your attention, I believe, should go to how could something like the foreign royalty deduction continue to incent high-wage, high-growth jobs in the state of Minnesota that overall make a big difference in the prosperity of the state of Minnesota. At the Minnesota High Tech Association, we believe it's an important tax tool to have in the tax toolbox to make globally competitive business something that can happen here in Minnesota, Mr. Chairman. And so we believe that Senator Rest's idea here of increasing the research and development tax credit is also something to consider. It's something that we have been longtime supporters of. We also have been longtime supporters of that upfront capital equipment exemption. But please know that there is very serious concern in the business community, especially in science and technology and innovation-based jobs, about the the striking of the foreign royalty deduction here. And frankly, I think it gives you all an opportunity to wrestle with this question and wrestle with how do we want to present Minnesota into the future. And maybe this is something that doesn't need to go away but needs to be renamed and reformed and be able to actually incent these sorts of jobs that make a difference in the prosperity of Minnesota.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Kelleher? All right, thank you. I hope I get this name right, Shay Mandel, am I getting close there?
No one ever gets it right, Senator, okay. And you just did. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I am Shay Mandel with Life Science Alley, and following Margaret is never fun. I will do my best. But as she so eloquently stated, this is about where we want to go. And while I wasn't sitting in the room in 1988, I think then Representative Rest and your peers were far ahead of the game. As Minnesotans, we looked at the future, looked at our businesses, and recognized that for them to be successful, what we really wanted was invention, creation to happen here, and then people around the world to get our products and services. And so companies like 3M, Medtronic, St. Jude, Boston got together with your peers then and talked about ways to be successful globally, but bring those dollars back to Minnesota and keep our R&D in Minnesota very strong. And surprisingly, 25 years later, that's exactly what's transpired. The world truly is flat today, and this really is about our companies continuing to be Minnesota companies that are successful globally. Huge R&D budgets, as Margaret said, and we're talking about dollar amounts and jobs that are significant. This is really progressive policy. This is unique to Minnesota. And I think our concern is that what we're talking about in a world that now truly is global, where Minnesota ideas continue to change the world, we're looking at turning the clock back to a time where we want to hunker down and take ourselves out of that equation. And our businesses won't be taken out of that equation. We talk a lot about wanting our startups, we talk about small businesses, spreading the wealth, and we talk about those companies that are going to be the next 3M, Boston, Medtronic, IBM. And when we talk about those companies, we're doing angel investor tax credit and a host of things that our organizations support. But in the future, as those companies begin to grow, as they continue to get investments from venture capitalists in California or investors in China, part of the question that they'll be asking is, where ultimately are we going to land as a company? And if we want that answer to be Minnesota, then part of this entire toolkit that Margaret talks about is sending the signals about this being a state serious relative to R&D, this being a state serious about high education. Senator Ress mentioned our companies benefit greatly from the education system that we have here in Minnesota, greatly from the quality of public policy we have. We also give a lot back by employing people at a rate that is far beyond what most of our sectors here in Minnesota do. So, you know, we're looking for a partnership with you. We do want to work through these issues, but we want to incent our companies to continue to be Minnesota companies while they continue to grow globally. And one other thing I would mention, and while this touches lots of companies here in Minnesota, it is not specific to life science companies. I do want to make an appeal about the environment that our companies, in particular medical device companies, are working in today. And so as we look to change our tax codes here in Minnesota, I want to remind everybody that there are a lot of other forces out there trying to take these jobs from us, and there are a lot of other forces that are pushing our companies down. So this week, the first $97 million payment showed up in Washington as a product of the new medical device tax. That will happen every 2 weeks. And by our count, about 20 to 25% of the medical device taxes that are going to be paid here in the United States come from Minnesota companies. So every 2 weeks, just feel the extraction of $20 or $25 million from Minnesota's companies. Not a product of any change in increase in product or sales. This is the way we've been doing business, now being taxed 2.3% of sales as a part of the new Affordable Care Act. That's real. Whether you like the law or you hate the law, and I'm sure you both have, you know, both sides have strong opinions, it's just a fact. The economy continues to change and shift. Getting a product through the FDA approval process today takes a lot longer than it did 5 years ago. it is more inconsistent. It costs a lot more. So part of the challenge we're dealing with here is the ability of our companies to invent, to protect those inventions, and to turn them into products costs a lot more in 2013 than it did in 1988. And yet we're continuing to expand. So, you know, as you all think about this, R&D tax credit increase, a big opportunity. I would also point out states like California have an R&D tax credit of 15%. This is a competitive landscape for these jobs. And again, as our companies continue to grow and expand here at home and abroad, there's just increased competition. So we'd love to work with you on all of these issues. Certainly appreciate your time and happy to answer any questions that you may have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mandel. Any questions? Okay. Thank you. Ms. Cadoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Beth Cadoon with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Minnesota Chamber is here to express our opposition to the repeal of the foreign royalty provision. We have heard from many of our members, similar to the organizations next to us, regarding their concern with this repeal. I won't repeat their testimony. What I just want to emphasize is one thing is we believe the purpose of this provision when it was put in place is still valid and important today, which was to encourage additional productive investment in Minnesota by U.S. companies with significant international activity. The question will be, when you're repealing a provision like this, is will the result in the foreign development and ownership of technology versus the current law that encourages the development and ownership of technology in Minnesota, and then the transfer of those royalties generated by that foreign activity back, thereby allowing more investment in Minnesota and R&D activity in Minnesota. We certainly appreciate Senator Rest looking at how you might mitigate this impact by the increase in the R&D. With this revenue estimate, you saw that it does increase taxes on corporations by $120 million. We'll certainly bring that increase of the R&D back to our membership to see how they view that. But just by looking at the fiscal revenue impact, realize that there is obviously going to be winners and losers under the situation. And as it was mentioned by the High Tech Association and Life Science Alley, will the impact on that be just to undermine some of those activities in Minnesota on R&D activity, which obviously those are the types of jobs that we want to make sure we have in Minnesota, that we grow in Minnesota. And was also highlighted is Minnesota has made strategic changes to the tax system over the years, really trying to focus strategically on how you can help increase some of those jobs in Minnesota. And some of those changes that have Minnesota's done, you know, the single sales factor is one of those. Also the capital equipment on in manufacturing equipment, and then the foreign royalty. Those were all strategic tax changes that were made to make sure Minnesota's companies are able to grow here and compete globally. And we think those are very important, and we want to make sure whatever tax changes that we make when we're looking at tax reform, and we appreciate the focus is on the tax structure and how we can make sure that our economy grows and jobs grow in Minnesota. So we appreciate the focus when we're looking at the tax structural changes.
Right. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and all three of you, thanks for coming and adding to our discussion today. And Ms. Cadoon, I'm going to apologize for bringing up the revenue question to you, because we really are trying to have a policy debate here, and we want to focus on that, and I appreciate your contribution to that debate. You can probably tell there's a little frustration in my voice as I listen to current criticism of some of the proposals that are out there. And so as we do move to the full division where we're going to have to deal with that part of this issue, I would ask you all to consider how we're going to accomplish those things, because we have to figure that out. But for today, we're going to focus on the policy part of this and see if we can understand it and see if we can figure out ways to, you know, do better for Minnesota businesses. And so I shouldn't have brought it up earlier today, but it is going to be the issue we're going to have to talk about at some point. And I would ask for all of you to contribute to that discussion, too.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, appreciate your comments. You know, when we do talk about the trade-offs, I'd be willing to look at what
what using the money on the bottom line, you know, if all of that went back into an R&D credit, is our bifurcated system a good one? You know, certain percentage on the first $2 million, and then above that in California, is it on all investment? And does it need to be made in California? I'm just curious. Mr. Mantle.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, thank you. In California, so they have a bifurcated system as well. On the first $2 million, it's 13%. So with our 10%, relatively competitive, I'll say, at the lower end. But then it does kick up to 15%. And I think, you know, so one of the things you see.
And does it all have to occur in the state of California?
I believe that's true, that it does,
which
yeah.
Ours does, obviously.
Yep.
So it's really only available to the work that's going on here in Minnesota. And also, and I hope you look at the that you discuss, you know, that. In terms of the trade-offs, we see that if you look at the revenue estimate, I hope you will, that the tax under this proposal for approximately 600 unitary groups would be affected. But with regard to the corporate franchise tax itself, this increase in the R&D credit, they are estimating would only be increased for an estimated 90 taxpayers, and on the corporate level, and only for another 20 on the individual level. And I think that's an issue about, you know, again, picking winners and losers for people that do research and development in the state of Minnesota, to then get to the ripple effect in terms of the economy and the types of jobs that are provided by these 90 taxpayers. And it's, it's, you know, what are the trade-offs and what's the best way to go forward in a 21st century economy, global economy? It's a new economy. The old economy is gone. We're in a global economy, and maintaining the FOC provisions and the foreign royalties, and they're connected, but they're not the same, is that the best way for us moving forward to incent growth here and continued and growing investment in Minnesota? And is there something that could be done more directly than moving domestic income into foreign income and then bringing it back and getting a break? I mean, and I realize that's oversimplified, but I think to the general public, that's what's going on. And why do this switcheroo stuff any longer?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, as I said in my comments, I don't think you're going to find the High Tech Association defending the FOC provision. But what I will say is that when you think about a global economy, what foreign royalty deduction really gets to is if you're developing the idea here in Minnesota, you're making significant investments in the research and development side of things. The name of the game, and I think you kind of alluded to this, is why is this increasing? I know that you all know this, that the markets that are increasing around the world are in other places. And so if we're going to have licensed intellectual property tied to Minnesota inventions and then not have the countries are already taxing the sale of that intellectual property or product in their countries, to be able to get it back into the state of Minnesota to make further investments in the research and development, that's what we're really talking about here. And if there's a better way to reform this particular provision or to do that, I think that is what we are most interested in, and frankly is in the interest of Minnesota to do, because in every measure that we see about What makes us a stronger science and technology and innovation-based state? Every one of those measures, nationally, internationally, look at patents filed, look at patents granted, look at the intellectual property development side of things. And so we certainly are, you know, not in a position to say the old system of the creation of a foreign entity in some place that most of us can't pronounce and then be able to put your money there is the way to keep going. But we do think that there is a interaction between research and development and the intellectual property, the sale of that good or service in another place, and how we get that money back into Minnesota in the most efficient and effective way.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Ms. Kelleher. And I think, you know, it's whether we want to keep old methods to achieve 21st century results. And I think that's what this discussion can lead to, I hope. One of the governor's principles as he was developing his budget is to, as I understand it at least, is this notion of honest discussions and transparency, and where we can and where it makes sense to take some of the complexity out of our system and you know, get rid of Rube Goldberg kinds of circles to get to a result in the tax system. And it seems to me that these provisions, the foreign royalties, and maybe even more so the FOCs, are ones that bear a lot of scrutiny, and that we should look for different ways to achieve that 21st century economy result rather than having billions of dollars kept in overseas and not repatriated.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this dialogue is important with Senator Rest and Senator Skoy, and we have a big picture we're trying to solve. And when we look at it, we've got to make sure we look at, is this going to make Minnesota better and stronger? Because I think Mr. Mandel's testimony is reminding us that we could make decisions that drive businesses out of Minnesota. And none of us want to do that. And so I know that we have to be very careful as we're changing some of these things, wanting to be in the 21st century, but we want to be there with the businesses,
exactly,
you know, that create the jobs. And so I just want to be cautious, because if we make decisions that either they publicly tell us or privately just leave, then we've done a disservice to Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Rest.
Just in response to that, and I absolutely agree, but we also have to ask the question of Minnesota businesses who don't get this tax preference. To what degree are we dampening their investment here in the state, in their businesses, because of the high corporate income tax rate that they pay? And that, you know, there's a balance there too of Minnesota businesses that are paying this rate. If you took this out, these particular preferences out, that rate could drop a lot, because we see that in the governor's proposal. And is it just creating new winners and losers, or different kinds of winners and losers within the tax system? Everybody would benefit from the lower rate, even the corporations that benefit from the tax preference of the foreign operating corporations and the royalties. Is that the better trade-off or not? And I think that is, you know, that's part of the whole discussion. And, you know, quite frankly, it is not partisan. It is really what we want, all of us want for the state, and maybe we'll come to the conclusion that the better trade-off is to retain this. But we shouldn't do it with our eyes closed and just say, well, it's there, And we've got, you know, some really, really good corporate citizens in Minnesota that take advantage of it. We want them to stay. We want them to invest. But we also have to look at a wider array of business interests as we're moving forward. But I thank you for your comments.
Mr. Mandel.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to make one follow-up comment to that because it is the critical question. You know, if you just look at the medical device industry, again, which is not comprehensive of Life Science Alley, you know, there's a small number of companies that would be included in this. We have roughly 35,000 direct medical device employees in Minnesota today. The community that supports that, so now we're talking about research organizations, small manufacturers for device companies, that's 125,000 Minnesotans. None of those small businesses are a part of this. But were manufacturing to move out of Minnesota, were these companies that do benefit from this to downgrade their R&D and employments, the ripple impact on jobs and many small businesses in Minnesota would be quite real. So it is a difficult conversation. We want to be there. But, you know, this does affect a lot more Minnesotans who aren't working for companies that benefit from the foreign royalty deduction than don't. And so it is an important part of the conversation.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Mandel, that's the argument that has to be made and the evidence for it given.
Senator Dietzig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is more towards staff, and they may not have the answer, but I'd be interested. First, the tax for approximately 600 unitary groups would be affected by the repeal of this. How many unitary groups are there totally? I mean, is this, you know, a half, or is it over 50% get this, or 10% get this subtraction? My next question is on the R&D tax credit, corporate franchise tax. We have 90 taxpayers. Is this number growing, or is it decreased? And then do you have a list of those 90? I don't know if Department of Revenue has that or who.
You can't get that information.
You can't?
No, it's privileged.
Do we know if there, can we get if, you know, did it used to be 100, and so, you know, the people that are applying or getting this are dropping, or is it growing? And then the same for the 20 taxpayers. We can't get that. But, again, is that list growing or decreasing? And it just kind of shows what our R&D atmosphere is here.
Ms. Van Mosch and Senator Scoy, while she's coming to the table.
Thank you. And while she's coming up, I wanted to go back to Senator Rest and Senator Gazelka's discussion about competitiveness. And, you know, it was a number of years ago there was a presentation in the tax committee about competitiveness and the business corporate tax rate. And I think it was, I want to say, Mr. Cox, but my memory isn't all there. But he talked about in the competitiveness of the business about eliminating the corporate tax rate. And he talked about the regressive nature of it. And he talked about replacing it with income tax on higher earners. And his presentation was that would make Minnesota a much more attractive place for the type of startup businesses that eventually will be providing the high paying jobs that Ms. Keller Anderson's been talking about, because as they start up, they don't have a lot of income, and so their corporate
payers.
they don't pay as much, but as they become successful, then they start to contribute back to the state. And, you know, maybe as we're having this discussion about Minnesota and competition, you know, maybe somebody, we should kind of revisit some of that discussion that was had a number of years ago, because it always was of interest to me to think about it in that nature, about how these startups develop and then grow and become successful and then pay back, as opposed to trying to figure out how they're going to contribute from the get-go.
Chair.
Ms. Van Mosch.
Susan Van Mosch from the Department of Revenue. In response to Senator Dietzick's questions, in terms of the 600 unitary groups, that's of a total group, or a total number of about 5,000 unitary groups. And in terms of looking at who the beneficiaries are for both the corporate and the individual income tax for their R&D credit. We are not able to reveal that information in terms of specifically who those people are because of data privacy issues. I can check and get a response for you on in terms of whether that number of people participating in the R&D credit are growing or how it's changing. I don't have that with me today, but I can get that for you.
Okay, Ms. Cadoon.
Of the committee, I just wanted to follow up on one of the when this was first put in place. Realized that it was really put in place to kind of try to strategically do a tax change to get at a portion of all the corporations in the state and those that are really competing globally, multinational companies. So I don't think it's a surprise that it's just hitting a smaller segment of all the corporations in the state. Regarding just tax changes in general for the Minnesota, for the business community, realize that for the state there's over 580,000 businesses. Over 90% of those are pass-through entities, so they pay their taxes through the individual income tax, and about 8% are your C-corps. So I think it's important whenever you're looking at all these changes is to make sure, keep in mind, also on the individual income tax side, because that's where you're going to impact a great majority of businesses as well.
Okay, anything, any further questions or comments for the testifiers? Senator Scoia.
Thank you. And Ms. Cadoon, you know, I think earlier in an earlier committee meeting, Senator Ress talked about the possibility of providing some pass-through relief for some of those businesses that have that sort of income. And maybe as we have this discussion, that would be something that we could be thinking about also.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. That was a recommendation of the 21st Century Tax Group that looked at how you can make Minnesota's tax system more competitive. And I believe Senator Rest had that bill before, so we think that would be a great discussion to have.
Okay. Anything further? Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, we will be meeting in the Tax Reform Division next week, and we'll be sending out by the end of the day tomorrow what topics we're going to be taking up. I do recommend, once again, as members are considering this broader discussion, to refer to the tax expenditure budget. We do have a proposal coming from Senator Reinert, who's a member of the Full Tax Committee, as part of a recommendation of a report that came earlier of establishing a tax expenditure review commission that would make recommendations to the legislature and the governor over time about which tax expenditures should be eliminated or retained, and that we keep them in mind and don't just assume that because something has been exempted or whatever that it's going to be there forever. And I think it's worthy of a discussion to see what's a good mechanism to continue to review tax expenditures again in the context of this 21st century moving forward economy for Minnesota.
Senator Scoia.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And the full committee is, again, I want to remind everybody, going to meet on Friday at 10:30. Next Friday, the 8th at 10:30, and the agenda will be the health exchange bill.
Okay. I guess one of the things we are going to do, Ms. Schaefer-Pelleman reminds me, is the proposals for, I'm not sure what day, the local option sales tax that we're getting, that we usually take up one by one, so we'll be getting the notices out of exactly what we're going to be dealing with in the division. We'll decide also whether, because we're meeting on Friday, we're going to meet 4 days next week or just three. So we'll get you that information as soon as we can.
Okay, thank you to the testifiers, and I will lay over Senate File 10 as amended, and that's it. We're adjourned.